not happen for the Yankees. Look, the fans may be, you know, migrating across town right now, too. They're going to love Juan Soto in Queens. But, X, you dog it in New York, and they will dog you.
I was ESPN talking about Sunday Night Baseball last night. A sign held on the broadcast said, Soto runs for $765 million, but not to first base.
Would you, if you're making $765?
Look, man, I'd like to think that I would hustle, but if you gave me $700+ million, there might be some times I'd dog it down the first baseline.
Every now and again, it's just
there
like
there might be some. Granted, too, Soto hasn't always been the busted out of the box guy that like Harper was at the beginning of his career, like Dylan Cruz is now. He's never been that guy.
Yeah,
he's been it's not like he doesn't try. Not like he is. Marcelo Zuna, I don't think has run in 5 years. He's not that guy.
Correct.
Right. But still, I can understand some of that. There's frustration. I think. Look, that's probably a Yankee fan that went across to City Field to watch that. Look, that stuff's going to happen. But I think we've seen over the last couple of weeks or so, at least this last week, a lot of people are revisiting this Juan Soto deal. So we're going to do it here on the Junkies. Toby Altizer sitting in for the guys here on Memorial Day. So I want to take a look at this Juan Soto deal once again, because I think when you look at where this team is at, this is kind of the first year where if they had not done anything, if they had sat on their hands and held on to Juan Soto, this would be the first year that Juan Soto would have been out of town, okay? So over what you've seen the last couple of years, they could have kept him, held on to him through arbitration. Now he signs the massive contract with the Mets. This would have been the first year that he would have been out of D.C. definitively, because he wasn't going to sign the deal to stay here. And if you look at his numbers so far this year for the Mets, he's batting .236 with a .363 on-base percentage and a .414 slug for a .777 OPS, which is, look, a slow start for him. I know a lot of people are saying all types of stuff about it. He's had slow starts, and he's struggled and been maybe not as happy in any place that he's gone. If you know anything about Juan Soto, this guy's a family-oriented guy, and not even necessarily just talking about his actual family, but talking about the relationships that he likes to build with the guys in the clubhouse. I mean, I've been over there when he came back as a member of the Padres, or when he's come back as a member of the Yankees last year, and he spends hours catching up with anybody that's still left from his time here with the Nationals. He spends any time catching up with Davey, catching up with literally anybody on the staff that was with him in his time here with the Nationals. He built a great relationship with and wants to see them. So I don't think it's any surprise that anytime he goes anywhere, whether it's San Diego and the West Coast, remember it was rumored that he wanted to stay on the East Coast because of the, you know, how close he could be to his family and they could travel and see him play and he could see them and all that stuff. So seeing him struggle in San Diego, and then eventually he got back to being Juan Soto in San Diego, right? And then New York with the Yankees last year. He was incredible, and he was great in the postseason once again. So look, I think it's, if you want to freak out, if Mets fans, whatever, send him back here if you'd like. We'd gladly take him back here in D.C. Have no problem finding a way to get number 22, his jersey back, and he can hang out here. Look, he's forever going to be a legend here, so he can come trotting back out here when he's 40, and he could hot dog it down to first base, and we'd still praise him. We'd still be thrilled to see him.
We'd still go nuts.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that I'm going to be interested in, too, is we've seen many stars leave this town, unfortunately, for this baseball team. And it seems like every single one of them is then signed in the NL East. It makes no sense how they can't go anywhere else. You can't go play in the American League. You can't go sign somewhere else. It always, when you sign your long-term deal, has to be with an NL East team. I do not get it. I don't get it. In Milwaukee, we'd always joke that anytime a Packers player left, they'd go with someone in the NFC North, and it seemed like it was always like the Vikings or the Bears.
It's like the area.
I don't get it. Whenever someone leaves the NL East, or leaves the Nationals, when they sign that long-term contract, they're going to be in the NL East.
Without a doubt.
It's disgusting. Like, look how many are on the Phillies. Obviously, now Juan Soto. But regardless, I'm interested how the reception goes over time. Obviously, Harper's going to be booed until he retires.
Forever.
That's just going to be the case.
He deserves to be.
Well, and look, I think I'm not mad at Bryce Harper anymore. I would say that a majority of fans probably aren't mad at Bryce Harper anymore and don't despise him like they once did, but he's still going to get booed.
The second he wore a Vegas Golden Knights jersey in the 2018 Stanley Cup final, that's
true.
I don't care if you grew up in Vegas, you play in D.C., and it was their inaugural season. So
it's true.
Let's not, you can't act like I grew up rooting for this team. No, I'm out. I'm done.
At least he got in on the baseline floor, right? He's like, hey, I've been a fan since they were coming around.
Yeah, hey.
I even alienated my own fan base.
He has as many cups as we do now.
That's true. But Harper's going to get booed. Like, Turner gets cheers, right, whenever he comes back.
As
but
he should.
Not, exactly. And they're not crazy loud cheers. The one that baffled me was last year, Michael A. Taylor got a massive reception. Massive reception.
Nats fans, no ball.
Anthony Rendon got a nice one last year as well. I think anyone that's on that 2019 team is always going to get a good reception.
Revered, yeah.
I'm curious how it's going to be with Soto over time. He's still going to get cheered. It's still Juan Soto. He's one of the most loved players in this city in the last decade, right? He was so much fun to watch. A teenage phenom, doing what he was doing as a teenager and as a 20-year-old, going into the World Series, being a World Series hero. He's going to be loved forever. I'm curious, though, how that goes over time. You know, he's first or second, third year in New York for the Mets coming to town. He's still going to get cheers. How about year 8 when he's just been demolishing your pitching staff? Like, I'm not saying you boo him. I'm just saying maybe it's like, yay.
Yeah, the cheers are not nearly as loud.
You know, it's not as thrilled. Regardless, though, this Juan Soto deal, I think, is going to go down as one of the craziest in baseball history. I mean, honestly, when you hear some of the guys talk about it on MLB Network, they're talking about the only thing comparable is the Herschel Walker trade, which has gone down in history as one that's just absolutely insane. I wasn't around for that one to remember some of the backlash. This one, it really wasn't backlash. And there are trades all the time that include a number of prospects, maybe not the number that Washington got back in this trade with the Nationals. But how rare is it that so many of the guys in that trade, and this is why you trade prospects, because usually the thought process is, and this is AJ Preller's thought process, you know, part of it is their owner was getting up there in age and they wanted to try and win a World Series while he was still alive to see it. And so they were being extra aggressive. AJ Preller's always been one to be extra aggressive with his prospects, willing to go get guys. And so generally the thought process is, look, these guys are all highly thought of. Chances of all of them hitting is next to none. And look, I don't know that necessarily all these guys are going to hit. There's still a couple that are TBDs, but it looks like the top three guys from this deal are going to be all-star caliber, if not superstar caliber. But they make that deal, and you get a generational, like very rarely do we get guys in sports, like we throw around the generational tag on guys all the time. Juan Soto truly is generational. Like when you look at his slash line for his career, in an era where pitching is better than it's ever been, 282 batting average, 418 on base, and a 526 slug. 943 career OPS. OPS Plus, which measures according to 100 being average, he's a 158. So he's 58% better than the average major league hitter throughout his career. He's been spectacular. And the comp that he gets all the time is the guy we brought up to start the show, Ted Williams. People are calling him the modern-day Ted Williams. So look, you can get a guy like that on your team. It's going to take a lot, and the Padres gave up a lot. But I think people are looking at where this Nationals team is right now, and people are starting to question the guys in charge. And I think that's understandably so. I think you definitely can. You know, people are looking at Davey, people are looking at Mike Rizzo, and they're wondering if that seat's getting a little bit hot and if at some point it might be time to pull the plug. I think when you look at Mike Rizzo, this trade is part of the reason why I give him a little more leash than I would Davey. And honestly, why, if you were to make a move, I'm keeping Rizzo and maybe moving on from Davey Martinez. Because look at what they got back in this trade. So we'll start with the guys that have played the longest here so far. And we'll start with C.J. Abrams. He'd been super hot over the last couple of weeks. Cooled down really over the last week or so. But on the season, 294 average, 352 on base, 531 slug for an 884 OPS. He has 8 homers on the year, 19 runs batted in, 28 extra base hits, 9 stolen bags. He's lowered his strikeout rate down by 2% this year. He went from being 50th percentile, so right around league average, to 63rd percentile this year, being a lot better at not striking out. And he's someone that was an all-star last year. He had months last year where he looked like he could be an MVP candidate. And this year, he's been good for the 2 months of the season. So it's just about some of that consistency and finding a way to stay that way. He's improved defensively. He's still not great, but he's gotten better defensively, I'd say, overall. But C.J. Abrams is a great piece. Like, if you were to just get C.J. and then a couple of other prospects for a Juan Soto, generally that's like, okay, you did a good job there. Maybe you could get two guys. Because then you add in Mackenzie Gore. I remember I was in Milwaukee at the time that this trade was made. I was actually on air both times. And I remember being on air when the Padres traded for Josh Hader, which was obviously more sentient to us in Milwaukee when I was out there. And I was crushing the Milwaukee Brewers because I didn't think they got anything in return. But if you looked at their top prospect list, I was like, well, they didn't give up anybody to get Josh Hader. Juan Soto is going to San Diego. And sure enough, the next day, Juan Soto gets traded to San Diego. And you get this prospect haul, which really is unprecedented. And to me, the guy that I wanted to make sure was in the deal, you know, CJ was going to be a part of it. Great. I didn't know a whole lot about James Wood at the time, to be honest with you. Some of the other guys, like a Hassel, was thought to be a safe prospect. He just made his debut for the Nationals this past week. And Susana was great to have in the deal as kind of a throw-in of sorts, a guy that just teenager that throws 100. I'll take my chances, right? Like, I'll see what happens. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But I'll see what I can do with a teenager that throws over 100 routinely. But the guy I wanted to make sure was in the deal was Mackenzie Gore. And Gore has taken another step this season. You know, the wins and loss record's not great. He's 2-5, but you can take that for what it's worth. I mean, I don't know how many people actually care about those sorts of stats nowadays, because for the most part this season, he's been really, really good. And, I mean, you look at his last time out, and he takes the loss in this game. He went 6 innings, gave up 2 hits and 1 run, and walked 3, struck out 9. He takes the loss in that game. Look, I think that's part of why pitching record isn't as big of a stat anymore. But if you look at his stats overall on the season, 3.47 ERA, and 62 and a third innings pitched, a 125 whip. I'd like to see that get lower just a little bit. 93 strikeouts in 62 innings. Again, 93 strikeouts in 62 innings. He's leading the major leagues. Yesterday, there was a spectacular performance by Tarek Skubal. I don't know if you saw this by Tarek Skubal yesterday. A Maddox is what we call him when you go a complete game shutout under 100 pitches.
Mm-hmm.
He did that with 13 strikeouts.
And I saw him throwing 102 in the seventh, too, yeah. So he wasn't slowing down either.
His final pitch of the game to strike out number 13 was, 102.6, the fastest of his career.
God.
Which is insane. AL Cy Young Award winner last year. All wild stuff. By the way, Mackenzie Gore has one more strikeout than him on the year. He
really?
Still leads the major leagues with 93. I'm trying to find it. There was somewhere put it out. I think it was MLB, or I can't find the stat right now, but he's on pace for like 298 strikeouts.
Woo!
He has been insane this season. I had an interview with him. We'll hear it next segment because I think he's had a really good change this season where I think mentally, he probably gets sick of me asking him about it. I didn't ask him about it blatantly in the interview you'll hear in just a couple of minutes, but it feels like he's taken that next step mentally because his start in Baltimore, did you get to watch that game when he was in Baltimore, Max? It was one of the weirdest.
Yeah, the 10 hits game?
Yeah, one of the weirdest stat lines I've ever seen.
It was bizarre.
3 2/3 innings, 10 hits, 2 walks. So 12 base runners in under 4 innings. Only the 2 earned runs. And by the way, struck out 9.
It's classic McKenzie Gore
game. It was weird because it was like the stuff. Usually when a guy's given up that many hits, you're like, oh, his stuff isn't great. But he struck out 9 still. So I couldn't figure out if the stuff wasn't great or what. So regardless, that sort of start shows me that maybe he's growing a little bit and seeing where before, when things wouldn't go his way, it would go bad very quickly. And things would kind of snowball into a bad outing. And that wasn't the case in Baltimore. But I think those two guys have now been in the bigs for quite some time. You're quite accustomed to McKenzie Gore. You know, his walk percentage has gone down every year in the bigs. In 2022, it was 12%. The next year was 9.8. Last year, 8.9. This year, 7.8. His strikeout percentage went from 24.8% last year to 36.3%, 97th percentile in Major League Baseball this year. So those two alone would make that trade worth it. C.J. Abrams and McKenzie Gore. And by the way, I haven't even mentioned the best player in this trade, who might be, in the next couple of years, a top 5 player in baseball in James Wood.
Like, maybe the next, like, Juan Soto?
He is so good. Like, I can't even tell you how good James Wood. Like, it's hard to put into words what he's doing. This season, 284, 378, 542 slash line for a 920 OPS, 13 homers and 36 runs batted in. He is special. I know Grant's bit is stop sleeping. But seriously, like if you need some reason to go out to the ballpark to watch the Nats this year, if you need a reason to tune in and listen or watch this team this year, number 29, James Wood is enough.
Guy could hit it on half street if he wanted to.
The ability that he has to just crush baseballs is really only like a couple people in this league. And we're talking Judge. We're talking Stanton. We're talking guys like that. Guys that, and also too, I've heard someone talk about this when they were talking about quarterback arm strength. And I think it applies here too, a little bit different, obviously, different sport. But think about when Patrick Mahomes throws a 50-yard pass and think about how easy it looks. And think about when Taylor Heinicke would throw a 50-yard pass, right? They could both do it. But one guy makes it look easy, the other does not.
And there's one guy, when the ball's in the air, you're confident it's going to reach his receiver and he's going to catch it. The other guy, you're like, oh, God, don't do that. No, stop.
Right? Like, Patrick Mahomes is a flick of the wrist. Taylor Heinicke, it's like 3 crow hops and go as far. I loved watching Taylor Heinicke, but arm strength was not his strong point. Think about watching guys hit the ball 110 off the bat, 115 off the bat. A lot of times it's swinging out of their shoes. Think about like how Harper used to swing, right? Like people's helmets are coming flying off. People are swinging as hard as possible. And then think about James Wood hitting a 115. It's just dink for James Wood and it's 105. Like his routine ground outs now are 106. Like it's hilarious. Like I love that Nats Park now throws that up there because he'll ground out to second. It's like, oh man. Easy play there. And then you look up at the stat board and it's like 107. Woo! That is not an easy ball to field there.
Yeah.
Like he crushes the baseball. He's been so special. We could spend, I know it wouldn't be the most exciting radio in the world. I could spend all 4 hours talking about James Wood.
I know you could.
And how good he's going to be. That was my biggest takeaway. Because I want to get to the other two people real quick before we hit a break. That was my biggest takeaway from my time in West Palm Beach. The second was Robert Hassel, which we'll get to in just a second. My number one takeaway was anybody that could tell you, whether it was PR staff, whether it was other players, whether it was coaching staff, whether it was people just around, everyone wanted to tell you, that James Wood kid, as good as you think he's going to be, he's going to be better. He's going to be a superstar.
Only an 85 overall in Diamond Dynasty right now.
He needs to be much higher.
I agree.
Much higher. And when you think about him, like, he could be an MVP-type guy in the next couple of years. And Twitter doesn't really allow me to tweet this very well, I've been trying to tweet out every video, superstar in the making with a strike through and in the making, because it's not in the making. He is a superstar already.
He's here. He has arrived.
And by the way, he's got some holes that he has to improve. Like defensively, I think he's got a lot to improve. I think there are still some holes in his swing. And yet, by the way, 13 homers, 36 RBIs, hitting 280.
Pretty good.
He is a superstar already, and he's got room to improve. And actually, I think quite some room to improve, which is just crazy to think about with how good he already is. Robert Hassel was another part of that deal. He was someone that was thought to be the safest prospect out of all these guys. He just finally made his major league debut. I think he can be a solid player for this team. I don't know that he's ever a all-star caliber like those top three. Abrams and Gore are clearly all-star caliber. Abrams already an all-star. Gore there. Wood is all-star caliber and potentially even better than that. MVP caliber in the future, maybe. Robert Hassel III, I think, is more so just everyday player. But this season in AAA, he was hitting 288 with a 337 on base, 742 OPS. His career in the minors hitting 260. Really good defender. Just gives you a little bit of everything. Kind of a five-tool guy, but maybe not extremely loud tools, but someone that can be really helpful. And then Harleen Susana, who's right now the 66th ranked prospect on MLB Pipeline, routinely throws over 100 miles an hour. Last season in 103 innings, 157 strikeouts. Has an issue with walks. He's currently on the injured list right now with a UCL injury, so hopefully it's something that he can have heal with just some rest. But regardless, this trade haul for Juan Soto is historic and something that if you think about the Washington Nationals right now and think about your excitement level, which frankly for a lot of fans is not all that high. Maybe it's grown a little bit over the last couple of years. But think about where you'd be right now with the Washington Nationals if you took out C.J. Abrams, Mackenzie Gore, and James Wood. Would you have a reason to show up to the ballpark? Probably not. The three most important players on this team right now all came from that Juan Soto trade. Just think about that. And so look, has Mike Rizzo had some shortcomings? Absolutely. Do I still give him the benefit of the doubt? 100% because of trades like this. Because of a Lane Thomas trade last year, which I think you're going to see dividends paid when Alex Clemmy keeps coming up the system and maybe gets into the big leagues at some point. Like I think Mike Rizzo still knows what he's doing. He needs to be given a little bit more resources at times. But I think Rizzo still knows what he's doing. And every time, if you need a reminder, just go look at this Juan Soto deal. Do any of these players turn into Juan Soto? Maybe not. One of the best players that probably all ever see. But would you take all three of these guys, and maybe more, for Juan Soto? 100 times out of 100.
Like, James Wood's pretty damn close, though.
He might be. He might be. It's absolutely insane. And by the way, if you're the Padres, they did pretty well, too, getting Michael King back from the Yankees when they traded him there. They might miss a couple of these guys. They might wish they had a few of these guys. Let's take a break. When we come back, I had a chance to catch up with one of the guys in that trade haul, Mackenzie Gore, over at the ballpark before Saturday's game. We'll play that conversation for you next here on the Sports Junkies on 106.7 The Fan. It is the Sports Junkies on 106.7 The Fan. The guys are off today for Memorial Day. Toby Altizer in for them. Max behind the controls today. Over the weekend, the Nationals were at home, lost 2 of 3 to the Giants. We were talking about that Juan Soto trade and the guys brought back James Wood, C.J. Abrams, Mackenzie Gore, Robert Hassel, all four of those guys on the big league squad. Harleen Susana still yet to come, but how special is that trade to see all those guys in the Curly W's now? Had a chance to catch up with Mackenzie Gore before Saturday's game. Here's how that conversation went. Toby Altizer out of Nationals Park with Nationals starting pitcher Mackenzie Gore. Mackenzie, how would you characterize your season so far?
I think we've done a lot of good things. Still early, still a lot of baseball left, and we just got to keep moving forward and getting ready for the next one.
I know you think of yourself as a power pitcher, strikeout pitcher. How cool is it? I don't know how much you look at this, but sitting and last week of May, you're at the top of the league in strikeouts. How cool is that?
Yeah. I mean, it's good. I mean, it means you're doing a lot of good things. It's just you want to be there at the end of September. So, we're off to a good start, and we're just going to build off this momentum.
Does it feel like you've taken a step? I mean, in terms of on-field results, we've seen you have good results in the past, but it seems like this year maybe there's been another step. Does it feel like that to you?
You always want to continue to get better. After every season, you look at things that were, you know, were good and bad, and kind of take it into the next year. So, yeah, like I said, we're off to a good start, and there's still things we can get better at, and just keep moving forward.
What are some of those things you want to improve on as the season continues?
There's a lot of things, and, you know, I'm not going to get too specifics, but, you look at it, especially after 10 starts, what we do well, what could we do better, and if it's winning a certain count or throwing certain pitches and certain counts or little things like that, because, you know, the league will start to adjust. Just continuing to look into that with the staff here and just where we're prepared each time out.
How cool is it to see all these young guys as a part of this team? Obviously, yourself and CJ have now established yourself as veterans on this team, which is crazy to think about because you haven't been in the bigs that long. But James Wood and Hassel made his debut. Lyle made his debut. How cool is it to see the young guys come up here?
Yeah, it's been great. Obviously, James is a really good player. And seeing these other guys, be able to get an opportunity the last week or so. But, it's been good. We got a good group. We got to continue to figure out how to win games consistently. We've done a lot better job of that last week. Just continue to get better as a group and figuring out how to win consistently.
Yeah, how difficult is that, figuring out how to win? Because, you've had success and these guys have had success in the minors and even at the major league level. But how do you characterize that, taking that next step so that you're winning ball games at this level?
Yeah. I think winning is – figuring out how to win consistently is more figuring out how to not beat yourself. And I think there's another level we can get to of beating ourselves and doing every fundamental thing right. And when you do that, this game is kind of crazy. You win. So we just got to continue to learn from our mistakes, learn from when we win, and keep doing that. And I think we're going to be all right.
I want to ask you about that start in Baltimore. It was one of the weirdest lines I've seen where you didn't maybe last as long as you'd like, but you still struck out 9 batters, only gave up the 2 runs despite a lot of base runners. Is that one where you feel like you can see some growth from yourself, where maybe in the past it wouldn't have ended with just the 2 runs, but in this one you're able to get out of there and keep the team in the ballgame?
I don't know. I guess you could probably say that. We just kind of were going one pitch at a time. I felt like I was throwing the ball well. We had over 20 swings and misses in under 4 innings. We had 30-ish foul balls, and we threw like 70-something strikes. So it was a strange outing when you kind of got under the hood. It's just sometimes this is a crazy game. We play so many games, and just when you think you've seen it all, you haven't. It was one of those weird ones, but we were able to keep us in the game, and it was a gutsy win. It kind of got us going because everybody had to contribute. It was a strange one.
Just a couple more. Talking with National starting pitcher Mackenzie Gore, what are some of the things that you're looking at in between starts? Are you just looking ahead? You're looking at kind of what some of the numbers were on your pitches, or what are you trying to work on in between starts, or is it kind of just go out there and try to do the same thing?
You get ready for a different – usually. You get ready for a different group every time, so understand who you're facing the next time out, and then obviously you got to be able to look at your start and see what you did well, see what you didn't. You get ready for the next group and kind of flush the last one.
Last one. When you're philosophically looking at a game plan, you're making something for, whoever you're facing that day. How do you balance pitching to your strengths versus pitching away from a player's, pitching to a player's weakness and pitching away from their strengths? How much do you focus on, I got to be myself versus trying to beat that guy?
Your strengths are important, and knowing yourself is probably the most important thing in this league, and the good players know themselves the best. But you need to know what the hitter's good at and what he wants to do at the plate. It's just part of being prepared, and just kind of when you're prepared, you're just more confident out there. So I think that's probably the easiest way to put it is you want to know things just so you're prepared, and if you need to use them, you can go right to it.
Best of luck the rest of the year, man.
Thanks.
That was National starting pitcher Mackenzie Gore. His next start slated to be Thursday night against the Mariners out in Seattle. The Nats starting a 6-game road trip tomorrow night. They'll take on the Mariners for 3, then take on the Diamondbacks for 3. This Mariners series should be fun. They're missing the top arms, aside from George Kirby in this one for the Mariners, but Mitchell Parker taking on Logan Evans tomorrow night, and then you have George Kirby taking on Trevor Williams, which Kirby hasn't pitched much this season, but he's someone who's a really intriguing young starter in this league. He'll be a fun one to watch against Trevor Williams on Wednesday night. Then Thursday, Mackenzie Gore taking the hill against Emerson Hancock. So should be a good series for the Nationals going out to Seattle. The Mariners 29-23. The Nats looking to get closer to 500 at 24-29. They've done this the last couple of years, Max, where they get really close to 500 and then immediately go on like a five-game losing streak. So it'd be nice if they could actually get to that 500 mark and get above it for a little bit. But overall, outside of the horrendous first week of the season, the team hasn't played horribly, and it was good to see them get back on track. That Baltimore series, it's kind of funny to see the trajectory of the two teams where both teams went into that series in Baltimore thinking, okay, this is our get-right series, and the Nationals took 100% of that and swept them, and it seems like now they're playing some better baseball. So we'll see if they can carry that on into the road trip. Want to take a break when we come back. It is Memorial Day. I want to get Max's thoughts. If you want to hop in as well, 800-636-1067. What is your ideal Memorial Day spread? Now, I didn't celebrate Memorial Day a whole lot growing up. It was more the 4th of July. But regardless, similar type of cookout sort of scenario there. What's your ideal spread? We'll give you ours next. You're listening to the Sports Junkies here on 106.7 The Fan. Welcome back. It is the Sports Junkies. Toby Altizer in for the guys today. They'll be back tomorrow at 6 a.m. on Memorial Day here today. Sure, plenty of people are having some cookouts today. So I want to get your thoughts. If you'd like to hop in, 800-636-1067. We'll get Max's thoughts here in just a second as well. What is your ideal spread on Memorial Day? Or what is your, you know, what's your ideal spread for a cookout? Because for my family growing up, we didn't necessarily have a Memorial Day celebration, a cookout with family. We always had a big one for the 4th of July. So maybe you don't have a big Memorial Day celebration. Maybe it's just a 4th of July. But what's your ideal cookout spread? What are you going with? How are you fixing your plate? What are we going with? Max, I want to get yours to start.
Ooh. I didn't expect to be going so early here. Ideal plate, it's got to have ribs on it. Shout out to my buddy Harry. He was on the smoker at 10 a.m. yesterday.
Oh, love it.
And the ribs he pumped out were incredible. I think he made like 7 racks. He basically forced everybody to have to come home with some. So I got some sitting in my fridge right now. I'm very excited.
Dry rub or saucy?
These were more of a dry rub. They weren't as saucy, but like you can sauce them to your own,
Of course,
to your own liking.
See, as a kid, I was a saucy.
Yeah.
But now as I've grown up and my...
It comes with maturity.
My taste has grown up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a nice dry rub.
Good dry rub. Yeah, there were pork spare ribs too. Like, beef is so... it's temperamental.
Sure.
So yeah, pork ribs, that's where I'm going for my first... Or for like my main meat. You can throw a hot dog or a burger in there too. Sides, mac and cheese, baked beans. What else? Those are kind of my two mains when it comes down to it. And then if you, any good party has a bread option as well. One thing I like to do that is a big hit. You can get these boxes at any store now. Red Lobster, Cheddar Bay Biscuits.
Ooh, yes.
Homemade.
Good play on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My top tier play. I love doing it. It whenever you walk in with a tray and people like first smell it, You're the life of the party.
Yeah, I had those a couple of months ago, and I ate far too many.
Yeah, that'll happen, man. They're just, you can't put them down. Once you start, you cannot stop.
They're so good, I could eat a million of those. So yeah, good call on that. So you're going with ribs as the main. You could go with a hot dog or a hamburger.
Oh, I also got to throw a macaroni salad or a pasta, or like any pasta salad, well, almost any pasta salad. Or a potato salad, too.
Okay. All right.
But yeah, that rounds out my ideal meal.
So I'm not like Grant, where I have the palate of a 3-year-old. But I will say I'm not necessarily a fan of a macaroni salad or a pasta salad or a potato salad.
Okay.
I'm not a big fan of those.
It's fine.
I am a big fan of ribs, but that was not traditional fare for our 4th of July's. So
yeah.
I don't think of that necessarily when I think cookout. Although, I would love to add that for the future.
Of course.
I need a nice smoker, something. I would love to be able to do that myself.
Yeah, smoked meats in general, just
big
amazing.
Big fan of ribs. So I'm definitely not out on that. I didn't grow up having that. So
yeah,
it's a little different for me. But to me, the staple has to be hot dogs and burgers.
Yeah.
Now, the question I have for you on that. So, for I'm a pretty simple guy when it comes to burgers and hot dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So, for a burger, I don't like mustard.
Okay.
I'm going to go with mayonnaise, ketchup, right, and onions. And then for a hot dog, I'm going to go ketchup and onion. That's kind of all I need.
Really?
I'll eat them other ways.
Yeah.
But for like a cookout, that's all I need on those. What are you doing on a burger or a hot dog?
Burger, I'm a pretty... I'm trying to collect my thoughts on how on burger construction, because I have a lot. But the simplest way I think you can perfect a burger is patty or cheese, patty, cheese, onion, pickles, ketchup.
Okay.
That's the perfect, like, and of course you can add, like, I'll add lettuce, tomato, bacon, all that. I'll gussy it up. But that right there, like, those are the main kind of points for a burger to me. Now, if a hot dog, onions for sure. If there's chili and cheese out, I'm throwing it on there 10 times out of 10. But if there's no chili, no cheese, you're just going like straight condiments. Give me a little mustard, a little onion, maybe even a little relish too, because I like pickles. I'm a fan.
Yeah,
I'm coming out as a pickle person.
Now, I will say, chili cheese dogs and me don't get along.
Yeah,
because of previous experiences.
Sure.
So I don't go along with the chili cheese dog thing.
I had Sonic chili cheese tots last night, and they've been fighting me all morning.
I don't fault anyone that does it, but I don't have great experiences with that.
I understand.
Also, so burgers and dogs are staple. I want fried chicken as well.
Ooh, okay.
Now, I don't necessarily care if it's a Popeyes or a KFC. Where do you lean? Fried chicken.
I'm a big fan of fried chicken. KFC fried chicken, I'm kind of more out on, just because I've had every KFC I go to is never really as good as the Popeyes chicken I'll get, or the Roaming Rooster, shout out, that I will get. Which, by the way, you know they do breakfast at certain Roaming Rooster
locations.
Never
had Roaming Rooster.
Bro! All right,
let's try it out.
That's a different conversation we'll have off air. You need to get there.
I'll have to try it out.
Yeah. Metal Crisp, like, came in and lobbied heavily for them one day, and I was like, you know what, fine, I'll try. And I don't think I'll ever really go back.
Yeah, I'll have to give it a try. But yeah, so for me, I want some sort of fried chicken. That was a staple growing up. And then you're right on about the baked beans. I would love some good mac and cheese. And I'm not a huge dessert guy, but if I was going to do a dessert, give me a good apple pie with some vanilla ice cream.
Easy. Easy.
Just nice and simple.
Simple, American.
Now, how did classic. Your family do it growing up? Did you have a Memorial Day cookout? Were you a 4th of July cookout?
So, when I was a kid, Memorial Day weekend used to be like our big crab feast that we would do.
Nice.
So, yeah, my mom and her friend Justin, who they've been friends for since before her and my dad even met, they would go to Jesse Taylor Seafood down at the wharf, and they would get however many bushels that we would need to feed, I don't know, anywhere between 20 and 60 people, depending on the year. So that was what we would do every year. So crabs were a big part of my Memorial Day growing up. So that's a big omission on my part, but shout out to the Crab Feast. It's always a good time, man.
That sounds like a good time, yeah. I didn't really do anything for Memorial Day growing up. It was more 4th of July. We have a big family.
Mm-hmm.
My grandma's one of 15. So we'd have quite a few showing up at our house to celebrate the 4th of July. But it was always a blast. It's always great. Nice cookouts. And nothing more American to me than that, right?
Yeah.
A nice cookout with burgers and hot dogs. And to me, like, I love a fancy burger. Like a nice teriyaki with pineapple.
You got to gussy it up.
But that, to me, that's not 4th of July. That's not Memorial Day cookout. Like,
correct.
Basic, plain Jane.
Salt, pepper, that's the seasoning on the burger.
Lettuce, tomato, onion, if you like that, ketchup, mayonnaise, mustard. Like, nothing more than that.
Yep.
Just bare bones.
Perfect.
And hanging out with friends and family.
That's the way you got to do it, man.
I love it. I love it. So you basically have ribs and I have fried chicken as a difference, right? I mean, you have sides. You have sides.
Listen, I'm a big sides guy.
See, I'm not.
Sides make a meal.
No. See, I'm So if I'm at home by myself, most days, if I'm going to cook a steak, like I'm going to cook a steak and that's it.
Really?
Like no mashed potatoes.
That's crazy to me.
Nothing else.
You're not going to throw...
I'm going to have steak with a side of steak.
I'm going to let the steak rest and I'm going to throw some asparagus in the pan and I'm going to have mashed potatoes or a potato salad ready depending on the time of year.
No.
Mashed potatoes in the winter, potato salad in the summer.
I'm going to have a burger with a side of another burger.
Sure. To each their own, man. Listen, I don't hate the play. I don't. But I just love sides too much. Too much.
Sounds like Max has questions for me. If you have questions about the Washington Commanders going into this season, we'll talk about it next. 800-636-1067. If you'd like to hop in, what questions do you have about the Washington Commanders going into this season? Also coming up at 9 o'clock, Bobby Blanco from MassinSports.com going to join us in studio for the final hour. Keep it tuned right here to 106.7 The Fan. It's the Sports Junkies.